Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into some really compelling first-hand accounts.
That's right. We're looking at A1 Skyraider pilots Roger Youngblood and Jack Drummond. Specifically, their stories from episode 39 of the Military Tales YouTube series.
These guys had some truly extraordinary times in Southeast Asia. Our goal here is to pull out the best stories, the key insights from what they share.
Especially that, let's say, legendary tale about the stolen Skyraiders.
Exactly. So let's get into it. What's great about the source, this specific episode, is we're hearing it straight from them.
Mm-hmm. It's their memories, their view of things, not filtered through, you know, years of historical analysis later. It feels very immediate.
Yeah, it gives you a real sense of their motivations, the sometimes unbelievable situations they found themselves in.
Absolutely. And getting there, becoming those pilots, their paths were pretty interesting, too.
Let's start with Jack. Grew up on a cotton farm, West Texas. He actually points to reading God is my co-pilot as a kid.
Yeah, that was the moment. It just sparked this lifelong thing about flying.
Set him on a very determined path, ROTC, then Air Force.
Right, the Reserve Officers Training Corps route.
Mm.
But even then, it wasn't straightforward. He wanted Air Commandos first.
Didn't get it initially, right?
No. But here's where you see his resourcefulness. He takes a job as a general's aide.
Which sounds like a step sideways, maybe.
You might think so.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually got him flying a whole mix of planes. T-33s, U-3s, even C-47s. It wasn't just about the hours, though.
No.
Well, he was hoping, you know, that connection to the general might help him get the assignments he really wanted later on. It was a calculated move.
Smart. Shows how sometimes the indirect route works out.
It really does. A good insight into navigating a career, actually.
Meanwhile, Roger Youngblood, his desire to fly seems like it was just there from the start.
Oh, yeah. That story from second grade. His show and tell about flying.
The teacher thought he'd actually done it.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
And organizing the neighborhood kids into, like, military formations. You can see the inclination early on. Service and aviation.
And his path into the Air Force was also pretty deliberate. He got drafted into the Army after college.
Abilene Christian University, yeah.
But he chose to transfer, specifically to the Air Force. Why?
Well, opportunity to fly, plus the extra pay pilots got. He went through officer training school, then pilot training at Reese, flew T-41s, T-37s, the T-38 jets. A solid grounding.
So they both end up in Southeast Asia, but their first assignments there were quite different, weren't they?
Very different. Jack trains on the RF-101 Voodoo, this fast recon jet. Gets to Okinawa.
Yeah.
No Voodoos. So suddenly he's flying C-130s, cargo planes, in Vietnam, hauling everything imaginable.
Wow. Or probably not what he expected.
Not exactly glamorous, no. He talked about the fatigue, the poor living conditions in Saigon. But he also mentioned in episode 39, it gave him some really valuable, unexpected flying experience.
Like what?
Retrieving damaged aircraft from difficult spots, things like that. It really demanded adaptability.
Yeah, you really see that adaptability theme with Jack. He might have been disappointed at first, but he clearly made the most of the C-130 time.
Definitely. Recovering those downed planes, sometimes needing super short takeoffs or, you know, unusual engine starts, that takes real skill. And nerve.
A hidden skill set, almost. Then he moves on to what he called truck hunting.
Right, the blind vet mission. Still in C-130s, flying over North Vietnam and Laos. But you could tell he wanted something more active, more direct engagement.
So he sought out a different role.
Yeah, he went for T-28s at NKP, Nakhon Phanom in 67. He seemed really enthusiastic about that mission. He compared it to weeding on his dad's cotton farm.
Weeding? How so?
Just persistent, focused, maybe a bit repetitive. But vital work. You just keep at it. That analogy from episode 39 really paints a picture.
It does. And he actively sought out Colonel Aderholt to get that job right, made his case.
Yep. Showed that ambition again, confidence in his skills.
Now, Roger, he wanted fighters or attack aircraft from the get-go.
Absolutely. Even when his first assignment was C-123 providers cargo again.
Yeah.
He volunteered for another overseas tour just to get into the A-1 Skyraider.
The SPAD, that propeller-driven workhorse.
Exactly. Known for being tough. Carrying a lot of ordnance, crucial for close air support. He trained on A-1s at Hurlburt Field, did jungle survival in the Philippines, then off to NKP.
His focus on the A-1 is interesting. It wasn't the newest or fastest plane by then.
No, but it was incredibly effective at what it did. Roger clearly had a passion for that specific kind of mission, close air support, search and rescue. He mentioned that SAR mission, Gunfighter 82, in the episode.
And he even wanted to become a T-28 instructor later. Seems like he wanted to pass on that knowledge.
Yeah, definitely suggests a desire to share his expertise.
Okay, so this brings us to maybe the most famous story from episode 39. The, let's call it the retrieval of the Sky Raiders.
Right. The backdrop is critical here. Cambodia is falling. General Aderholt has these 11 A1s sitting at Utapau in Thailand.
And his plan?
Given to the Thai military, build some goodwill, help regional stability. That was the idea.
But Jack wasn't convinced.
No. He raised some very practical points, as he recounts in the episode. 11 planes isn't many. And crucially, where were the spare parts? Where were the training aircraft to keep them flying long term?
He saw the logistical gap.
Exactly. It shows his strategic thinking. He knew what it took to actually operate a squadron, not just have planes sitting there.
But Aderholt was set on it.
He was. And this is where it gets, well, interesting. Jack, knowing Aderholt wasn't backing down, starts thinking, who could fly these things out? Who'd be willing?
And he thinks of Roger.
He does. They'd met just a few months before, working on that side-firing gunship project for the Cambodians.
Yeah.
Jack mentions this meeting in late 74 or early 75 in the episode.
So he kind of knew Roger's mindset.
Maybe he sensed the kindred spirit. So I'm passionate about the A1, maybe willing to bend the rules a bit in extreme circumstances.
So this plan to retrieve them, it happened fast.
Very fast. As they tell it, there were no formal checklists for the E-Model A1 they were going to fly first.
Wait, none?
Nope. They literally made one up while they were taxiing out to the runway.
That's incredible. And Roger was worried, right?
Understandably. He pointed out, you know, the E-Model didn't have a right seat at dual controls. He was basically on his own in an unfamiliar variant. Huge risk.
Highlights that improvisation you sometimes need, huh?
Totally. Relying purely on experience, quick thinking, and knowing the aircraft family.
And the startup wasn't smooth either.
Huh. No. They forgot the fuel boost pump switch, flooded the engine.
Flames from the exhaust.
Big flames, apparently. Then on takeoff, the rudder on that two-seat fat face model was way more sensitive than they expected. Nearly went off the runway.
Wow. Just getting it airborne was an adventure.
It really emphasizes the seat of your pants nature of the whole thing. Took real skill and calm heads to get through those first few minutes.
And even in the air, more surprises.
Yeah. They'd used half flaps for takeoff standard procedure if you're loaded with bombs.
But they weren't.
Nope. Realized after takeoff it was the wrong setting for a clean aircraft. But despite all that, and the fact one of the planes had supposedly been dunked in water at some point.
The landing was fine.
Uneventful, they said. Roger used his tailwheel first technique. He mentioned in episode 39 that came from flying Piper Cubs way back.
Yeah.
Those basic skills pay off.
Amazing how skills transfer. So they got one out.
Yes. And the next day, they went back for more. Managed to get two H models out.
That.
But then Aderholt told them to stop. Abruptly. Likely orders came down from higher up about the official transfer to the Thais. Bureaucracy caught up.
And the other 7 planes.
Their fate, as they mentioned, is a bit unclear. An untold part of the story.
And the condition of those planes they did get. Open canopies, rain on the seats.
Yeah, ejection seats probably didn't work, had to be pinned manually. Weapon systems, who knew? They were just getting them out.
Incredible story. So after this escapade, life went on. Jack's time in Laos sounds fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Flying T-28s with the Laotian squadrons, wearing safari suits, no rank, acting as an advisor.
And using a non-flyable T-28 as a taxi.
Apparently. Resourceful, like we said. He also worked with the Raven FAT's forward air controllers. Then more assignments, an MBA, retired in 1980, went into strategic planning, real estate.
Quite a varied career post-Air Force, too.
Definitely. And Roger. He stayed with the Cambodian team in Thailand for a bit, flying AU-23s, other planes.
But he eventually got his wish to fly jets, right?
He did. Flew A-7 Corsair Sex, assignment to Davis-Monthan and Myrtle Beach A-7s and A-10s there, too.
Mm?
Did a tour in Korea, then finished up back in Thailand. Retired after 24 years.
And went into mortgage and real estate development.
Seems like a common path for retired officers that move into business or real estate.
Now, decades later, something amazing happened regarding those retrieved Sky Raiders.
Yeah, this is a great part of the story from episode 39. Both Jack and Roger, separately, discovered that some of those very planes ended up in museums back in the U.S.
Roger talked about seeing his plane again. It sounded very emotional.
You can imagine. That bond between a pilot and an aircraft they flew in combat or, you know, stole, it's deep. And apparently, General Aderholt worked behind the scenes to get those planes back stateside.
A nice closing chapter for those specific airframes.
It really is. Preserving that history.
Something else that came through strongly in their conversation in episode 39 was faith.
Mm-hmm. Jack mentioned relying on the 23rd Psalm during combat for protection, comfort.
And Roger also spoke about his strong faith background sustaining him, even shaping how he interacted with the Buddhist Laotian pilots he worked with.
It's a reminder, isn't it, of the personal anchors people hold on to in extreme situations. Faith, belief systems, they play a big role for many in service.
Looking back on their careers, as they did in the episode, how do they frame it?
Both saw their paths as maybe unconventional, not strictly by the book sometimes, but ultimately really fulfilling.
Roger pointed out he got to fly three great attack aircraft, T-28, A-1, A-7, maybe A-10 too.
Yeah, an incredible logbook. And Jack really highlighted General Ederholt's positive influence, despite their disagreement over the Thai transfer sometimes. He saw him as a key figure.
They also touched on coming home, didn't they? The divided country.
Yeah, that complex feeling many Vietnam vets experienced. Mixed emotions.
So wrapping up this deep dive into episode 39, what really sticks with you?
Well, beyond the incredible flying stories, it's the human element, the resourcefulness, that improvisation under pressure we talked about.
Yeah, making checklists while taxiing, and the bonds between them, that camaraderie.
Definitely. And just the sheer dedication to the mission, to the aircraft, to each other, driven by duty, but also clearly by a deep passion for flying.
The ingenuity really stands out, solving problems on the fly, literally.
Exactly. And that sense of responsibility these guys carried.
It makes you, the listener, think, doesn't it? What pushes people to face that kind of danger repeatedly?
How does something like personal faith fit into that military context? How does it help people cope and endure?
What are the long-term impacts? Clearly, these experiences shape them profoundly.
It really invites you to dig deeper. Look into the A-1 Sky Raider itself, the air war in Southeast Asia, the stories of the pilots. There's always more to learn.
Always more layers. Well, on that note, we'll bring this deep dive to a close. Thanks for joining us.